This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And an interesting week in technology. We'll have some nice discussions today about what has been going on with the new iPhone 4S battery drain.
Which you actually own.
I now own that, yes. Uh-huh. There's actually a new chip maker getting into the server business. ARM is moving into the server business to take on, as direct competitors, Intel and AMD. They, of course, ARM, Applied Microcircuits, has been making chips for cell phones and mobile devices where they focused on high efficiency, and now they've taken that high efficiency to the server realm with 64-bit architecture. It's an interesting development. Some high-tech Halloween applications are out there, and also some way to carve your pumpkin online in the event you just hate to have all that mess in the kitchen. So, so we can handle
but
that.
But it takes all the fun out of it, don't you think?
Well, it does, but then you don't have to clean up. Oh, well, the one thing is, well, we'll get into, you could actually carve it online and then you can take a picture of it instead of having a carving failure and then having to get another pumpkin.
Ah, I see.
So it's kind of, you can prototype it online. Google TV's trying to, trying to update what they're operating with, and that's been going on. I'm going to feature today the man behind 4chan.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually quite an anti-establishment chat site. This is where Anonymous came from. Anonymous, the big hackers that will break you in everywhere. Yep. And it was started by a guy in his bedroom while he was in New York City, while he was only 15.
His bedroom was in the basement of his mom's house, I'm guessing.
It was. It was, it was in his mom's house. Yeah, that's
catching
right.
Catching on over here.
And then what I couldn't make... And he was actually living with his mother until he was 23.
I'm not surprised. Unmarried.
We'll
doesn't
talk.
Doesn't necessarily shower every day.
So we're gonna go. Well, I don't know about the showering piece, but it is kind of a funny story. And then, of course, we had a very full mailbag as always.
Well, that would be my cue
A letter in your mail.
Yes,
okay,
indeed.
Okay,
we got an email from Eleanor. Dear Tech Talk, I am new to this digital photography. What are RAW and JPEG images? What's the difference? What do they do? When do you use them? Where do you find them? Love the show. Thanks, Eleanor. Okay, now RAW is actually a file storage content. It's not like, oh my goodness, that is just a RAW picture.
Yeah, you would have to take it there now, wouldn't you?
This is a file storage technique. A JPEG is a compression architecture. is actually a file format for compressed video. The RAW format captures the raw, unprocessed data from your digital camera. And by raw and unprocessed, I mean the data that's actually captured by the photo sensors in your particular model of camera. So a raw format from your camera is going to vary from camera to camera because they actually have different image formats.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, different sensors capture light and color in different ways. And so the raw image is really sort of like looking at a negative. If you're into photography, you look at the negative, it's not really very attractive until you print it.
Right.
And so this is an unprocessed data, but it records the information as close to its original form as possible. The raw format is typically not compressed. Now, JPEG is a standard file format, and it's JPEG, pronounced JPEG.
Mm-hmm.
Now, JPEG, of course, is an acronym that stands for the Joint Photographic Experts Group.
I recall Back in the dark ages of tech talk at this radio station, we talked about JPEGs.
Yes, we did. Well, a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. Now, this is actually a lossy format. In other words, what they do, they throw away information that they think the user is not going to perceive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a perfect, compression. A lossless compression is a different type of compression. This is lossy, so they can get more and more compression. And you can choose the amount of loss that is acceptable to you, and then you can get various sizes of JPEGs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and for most users, a JPEG is certainly good enough. It's not as good as RAW in terms of having all the information there, but in terms of just having a useful image that you can send around to your friends, it's quite good, because since JPEG is an open file format, you can send that to anybody, and they can look at your picture. Now, on the other hand, if you are a really serious photographer, you may want to use the RAW format.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I once had a friend who took a lot of underwater digital photography. And when you go underwater, you go down, if you've ever done scuba diving, by the time you, say, get down to 100 feet, everything is sort of like black and white because all the colors are filtered out.
Uh-huh.
So when you take a picture underwater, you've got significant color shifts. And so how do you do the color adjustments underwater? So he would have a whiteboard, and he would photograph the whiteboard to see how it looked underwater, and then he would photograph what he was doing. And he did not like JPEG because he did not feel that it gave him the actual exact color that was there where he was underwater. And so then he would actually take the raw images coming out of his camera, and he would put it into Photoshop and process the raw images to get the color that he thought was as true to life as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a great believer in the raw image. And I think any, fine photographers that want to make, art-level photographs with perfect color are going to probably want to use raw. Now, if your camera will not save it in both the RAW format as well as the JPEG format simultaneously, some will save both. That means that if you only save in the RAW format, you can't show the picture to anybody because they don't know how to read it. So you're going to have to put it into an image processing tool that can read your particular RAW format. Then you're going to have to save it as a JPEG to show it to your friends. So.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, if you're not that serious of a professional photographer, I would just go for the JPEG. It's certainly good enough. Now, I always select the highest resolution JPEG because you can actually choose lower and lower and lossier resolution JPEGs, but you really would like to get the highest resolution JPEG.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so say for a typical, 6 megabyte camera or 8 megabyte camera, that megapixel camera, that might be a 2.2 megabyte file. And so, that's kind of a typical file size. And so if you want to email that, you might have to compress it down further, but at least you've got a lot of information there. And then you don't actually have to compress it further unless you want to email it. Now, whenever we say post a picture to the internet, we always reduce the quality because we want it to load quickly.
Right.
And so we just simply match the required quality that's required on the internet. Well, that was a great question, Eleanor.
The difference between Lightroom and Photoshop, are you familiar with either one of those? She was asking about those
two.
Yeah,
see, well, Lightroom is actually more of a professional piece of software for processing imagery. Photoshop is one but either one can probably read a raw image. Say if you've got my friend had a Nikon camera actually, and when you're going to get a fine digital camera that actually has the ability to store raw. It's like he had a Nikon camera, and the Nikon camera had a particular raw image format. And either Photoshop or Lightroom could read the Nikon raw image format.
Now, if somebody was interested in getting into photography and in a serious way, would you recommend Lightroom or Photoshop, or does it really matter?
I don't think it really matters.
Doesn't matter.
No.
Are both compatible with both Macs and PCs?
Yeah, okay. You can get both Mac and PC versions of either one of those.
Okay.
So it really doesn't matter. It's probably the biggest issue is you've got to decide how you're going to identify what is the true color. So you actually have to have some kind of color standard. Like when he was, whenever he would take photographs underwater, he would always have a white standard color board that he would photograph first, and he would use
white
that.
White balance.
He would use and then he could then he manually white balance it when he came out. So that's probably the, you know, getting good ground truth is probably the most important thing when you're going to do this image processing. Okay, we got an email from Marianne. Dear Tech Talk.
Is it Marianne we know?
I don't know. I really can't. I can't really reveal
you can't divulge.
That. I just got an iPhone 4S and I'm confused about backing up my iPhone to iTunes. Should I back up to iTunes on my computer or should I use the iCloud? Also, what is PhotoStream? I am confused by all of this new technology, and my husband won't help me figure these things out.
Well, you know, I would kind of expect that.
Thanks, Marianne.
Husbands are like that.
I know. Okay, this is one of the problems. The help desk support at home on the weekends is typically much lower than what you get at work during the week.
No help desk.
So before I get into the specific answer, there are a couple of ideas for the help desk. You could go to Facebook and you could pose the question on Facebook, and some of your friends might answer it. Actually,
they might give you the wrong answer, though.
They could. I was actually over in Starbucks before the show doing show prep.
You never do that.
And there was a woman there who was getting advice on her iPhone from some guy at a table at Starbucks.
He was just trying to pick her up. Oh, yeah. I'm thinking, could this be you?
No.
No. Okay.
No. I was the guy on the next table. She just went there. She got her cup. She says, you know, I got trouble with my iPhone. Can anybody help me? She had like five people ready to help her. You know, with her iPhone icons.
I guess she was cute, huh?
She was okay.
Excuse me.
Now, let's talk about this thing. Okay, iCloud is something that Apple just came out with. It's basically 5 gigabytes of free storage that they make available to any of the iPhone, iPad users. And so you use your same username and password as you have for iTunes, and you can log on, and then you can choose to back up to iCloud. Now, iCloud does not store your application. So like when you buy an application or buy a book, it's going to be downloaded to your device. If you synchronize it with your iTunes on your computer, all the applications are going to be stored on your computer. So this is only used to store pictures and documents and things that you create. It might be notes or anything like that. Now, the nice thing is if you do the iCloud backup, you can click PhotoStream. And PhotoStream will actually synchronize all the photographs and all the devices. So if I take a photograph here with the iPhone.
You could do that.
Yes.
You might already have done
it. And it will automatically show up by PhotoStream on the iPad.
Wow.
It takes a few minutes for it to synchronize. Now the iCloud only does this backup if you are near around Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. It won't do it over the 3G. So you've got to be on Wi-Fi, and then you get this backup synchronization. So it's actually quite a nice feature. I really like this PhotoStream element. Now, you can synchronize if you've got Outlook on your computer, you can actually synchronize your Outlook, all your mail, all your contacts with, going through the iCloud, and that works out quite nicely.
Is this only on the 4S, or can you use any Apple phone for this?
You can use any Apple phone that's been upgraded to iOS 5.
Ah, okay.
So the 4, if you upgrade it to iOS 5, it works. Mm-hmm. In order to support PhotoStream on your computer, in order actually to talk to an iPhone that's on iOS 5, you've got to upgrade the iTunes on your computer to 10.5, which is the latest version.
Gotcha.
And they also then have, they also give you an iCloud control panel, which then goes down into the icon bar at the bottom. You click on that, and then you can choose which items you want to have on the icon, which features you want to use for the iCloud. Now, it turns out that I'm not synchronizing through iCloud all my contacts and all of that because I'm attached to the Exchange server at work, and that automatically downloads all the contacts to any device I have. As soon as I log on, get my email, I get all of those things right away. So congratulations. I suggest that you go to Starbucks more often in order to get some iPhone support.
Plenty of dumb guys there who lead you in the wrong direction and screw up your iPhone. Now, in order to go, to download iOS 5, can you do that yourself?
You can do it yourself.
Like,
you can
like an app or something?
No, it's just, you know, you can actually when you attach your iPhone to the iTunes on your computer, it will actually bring up a screen and you can say check for updates. And then it just downloads the update and then it just transfers it right over.
Wow,
and
that's
so you can
cool.
you know you now when everybody when the iOS 5 just came out and everybody was like trying to initialize their iPhone 4S, there was a certain delay on getting this download taken care of, but now it's pretty quick. So
gotcha. So
you should be able to not have any trouble to upgrade to. But to get the 5, you're going to have to first upgrade iTunes to 10.5 and then upgrade to iOS 5.
Gotcha.
Then you've got it all.
Okay.
We've got an email from Allie. Dear Tech Talk, I have a friend in New Jersey who sends me a prayer list for friends to pray for. I've not received any prayer lists in 2 weeks. I called her. She said she sent them every day. Why haven't I received any? What's the problem? I'm using Gmail. Thanks,
Allie. I believe that's
Allie.
Called divine intervention, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, divine intervention. It's called a divine intervention spam filter. Now, usually missing email is mistakenly labeled and disposed of as spam. Now, while a prayer list may not sound like spam to you, it could look like spam to other people.
Right.
And the thing that Google uses, they use the philosophy that the wisdom of the crowd. And so if somebody gets, say, that same prayer list, maybe they ordered it one time and now they no longer want to get it, and they click, this is spam, and then perhaps 10% of the people who receive it say, no, this is spam, I don't want to get it anymore, instead of simply asking not to have them send it to them, Google will say, well, this must be spam, and then it's spam for everybody. So I would recommend that actually you need to check your spam folder if you're using you're using Gmail. Check your spam folder. When you find the prayer list, you know, you've got a button that says, this is not spam. Click on that and let Google know that you don't think it's spam. And if enough people do that, then they'll get the message and revert it back. You might also contact the company that is sending out the email and let them know about this problem, and they may be able to work directly with Google in terms of negotiating how the spam filter is dealing with it.
Now, if you just took that letter out of the spam folder and put it into the inbox, would that accomplish the same thing?
No, you have to click it.
You have to say
this is not spam, and then that sends an email to Google saying this is not spam. If you just move it, okay, you've moved it, but you haven't told anybody.
Gotcha. Okay.
So you really want to tell them. Now, I mean, this spam is one of the biggest problems I've even got at Stratford. We've got very sophisticated spam filters at Stratford, and we periodically have people that go through the spam filters, and they locate emails that should not have been, you know, pulled out by spam, and then we reverse it. So we have to constantly monitor this spam filter. Otherwise, there are some very good emails that come into the school that we wouldn't want to get. For instance, we have a lot of students that come to school from Asia, from Pakistan, from India. And it turns out a lot of the spam filters, if you're from a foreign country, they just put it in spam. So if you get an email from Pakistan,
it automatically
goes into spam. Now, in our case, these are legitimate inquiries.
Right.
And so we've got to really monitor that spam filter and that spam folder very carefully. Well, those were great emails.
Yeah.
Thank you, Allie,
Absolutely.
For that question.
Yep. Thank you for sending us your emails. And, Doc, how would somebody send us an email?
They can send us email by emailing it to techtalk@stratford.edu. I'm also monitoring the Facebook page, facebook.com/techtalkonline, and I'll give you a couple of the comments that Ken Hutchison gave us last week, and I missed them because they came in just right at the end of the show.
Broadcasting live from the opulent but yet not overly ostentatious Faculty Lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio. We'll be right back here on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Now, it is time for...
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we are going to feature an individual who started 4chan by the name of Moot. M-O-O-T.
Okay.
It's all lowercase, Moot. He did not want his real identity out in the open because he felt anonymity was the key.
You're just about to change that.
I know. Well, it was actually published a couple of years ago by Time Magazine. Moot is also known, when he talks to his mother, as Christopher Poole.
Apparently he does that a lot.
He says, Chris... What in the world are you doing?
What's wrong with you?
He's an American internet entrepreneur from New York City. He's noted for founding the website 4chan, and he most recently founded another website called Canvas. Chris Poole was born in 1988 in New York City. There, you know, I could find very little actual information on him because he wants to keep his private life really private.
Seems so.
I mean, he was living with his mom until he was 23, so I don't think he wanted the 4chan folks to know that.
That doesn't do a whole lot for your street cred.
No, Poole started 4chan on September 29th, 2003, out of his bedroom in New York City. At the time, he was 15.
Sorry.
He was 15. Now, 4chan, it's 4chan.org, the number 4, C-H-A-N.org.
Mm-hmm.
Now, He did it anonymously, and his screen name was Moot, always with the lowercase. Now, he was interested in setting up 4chan because he wanted to duplicate a discussion board in Japan that was very popular, 2chan. This was the number 2chan. And 2chan in Japan was dealing with his animimes, these cartoon characters. And so it was a site where people would post images of animimes, they would change them, and it was extremely popular in Japan. And he liked animimes, so he wanted to bring them to the U.S. He said, okay, if it's popular in Japan as 2chan, I think I'll start 4chan here. Because he wanted just... two up them over what
gotcha.
They had. And so he started
double
four,
the 2chan.
So he started 4chan.org on September of 2003. Then at the urging of his friends, he basically set up an image board system that was far more sophisticated. And that total image board system launched October 1st, 2003. Now, one of the key elements of 4chan is that all postings can be anonymous. You don't have to reveal your identity. And this is kind of a major feature of 4chan. You can go on there and say whatever you want. Nobody knows who you are. There's really no control. You cannot even own a username. So you could log on as like Radio God, and then somebody else the next day could just take Radio, say they're posting things for Radio God, and nobody knows who really is the Radio God,
mm-hmm.
So it's, but then they figured this doesn't really matter because everything is anonymous. And the second thing that it has is that there is no memory to this. Discussions are not archived, so they just roll through constantly. It's like a stream of consciousness. Maybe there's only a day's worth of stuff up there, and it just kind of rolls through. and sort of and the funny thing is people will repost stuff that was actually up just 2 days ago with like a slight modification.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got this sort of this dynamic fresh look to it that actually people like. Now some people didn't like somebody coming in and stealing their name like Radio God, so they had what they called trip codes, which could add a certain ability of a user to sort of keep a name. And what happens is, after you put in your name like Radio God, you put in the number symbol, the number, you know, the hash mark,
right.
And then you put some phrase, you know, like Mary Had a Little Lamb, and then there's a hash program that takes Mary Had a Little Lamb and it turns it into a code. So it appends your Radio God with this code, and only somebody else could use that code if they knew that you used the phrase Mary Had a Little Lamb. So that provides a certain degree of security. But since there are a lot of hackers there, only one level of hashing is fairly easily hacked. So you could actually put two hash marks and do double hashing, which is called the secure trip code.
Mm.
And so some people that would like to own their handle will use the secure trip code. Now, images and comments now appear under 44 topic headings. So you can go to that, Jim. You can go to 4chan.org.
I think I'll do that right now.
And these topics range from fashion to sports to video games to weapons to paranormal to sexy, beautiful women. And the most popular forum is the random forum, which is the /B forum. The /B forum, it's not, you just say anything you want. There's really no rules. And that probably about a third of all the posts on 4chan are on the B column. And the people that are like, always like to post on the B column, they call them B-tards.
Great.
And you go on there, it's like a stream of consciousness. I mean, and there's a lot of bigotry on there.
I'm noticing that.
You really cannot also go to 4chan at work. Because it's bigotry, slander, pornography, all sort of wrapped into one, and it's a stream of consciousness. And occasionally what happens out of all of this, there will be some idea that sort of emerges, and then people say, hey, that's kind of interesting. You remember that thing called Rick Rolling?
Yeah.
That came out of 4chan. In the big, somebody, you know, in the random thing just posted the first Rickroll. Then somebody liked it. Somebody else did it. Pretty soon it went viral and everything was Rickrolling. Then have you ever seen these things like these LOL cats where you got a picture of a cat with some sort of misspell?
Stupid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it turned out in the random column, people started posting pictures of their cats on Saturday and it became known as Catterday. And then somebody put a misspelled caption on it, and it became the LOL cats, and that went viral. So there's a lot of stuff that actually has come out of 4chan, and it's been known as the meme factory. This is like Rick Rolling. LOL cats are called memes, and they sort of like grow out of this thing. And what Moot believes is that this purely anonymous, open architecture where you can say anything you want, there are really no rules, really leads to sort of a creative ferment out of which come a lot of good ideas. But there's probably 95% garbage there. And the people that actually use it, they sort of go there and they'll sit in the B channel like they're going to the treehouse, and they just sort of sit there and they just kind of make comments all day. Then over time, things emerge.
These people would probably not have jobs, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it is. And you see, one of the groups that came out of 4chan was the group Anonymous. They all met on 4chan.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this is the group of hackers that started attacking anybody who they felt was trying to censor them. So, you know, so there are a whole series of attacks by Anonymous on whenever they against any perceived slight against the community. Now, 4chan has been called the anus of the internet.
Yeah.
So it's probably, there's a lot of stuff there that's not so savory, but it actually is a cultural phenomenon. And so what happened was Time Magazine, actually, it was around 2008 when Moot's real identity was revealed as Christopher Poole in a July 9th, 2008 Wall Street Journal interview. Now, that same day, Lev Lef Grossman of Time published an interview with Moots on Moots' influence as the non-visible administrator of 4chan. And in March of 2009, Time placed Moots' persona in the 2009 Time finalists list of the most influential person, and then they wanted an internet vote. Now, this was quite interesting because after the vote closed in April of 2009, Moot was voted as the world's most influential person.
Interesting.
However, it looks like 4chan had hacked the vote.
Well, yeah. Okay.
And what they did, they actually, not only did they make certain that Moot was number one, they controlled the first, the order of the first 21 candidates and the order that they were winning. So the first letter of each of their names spelled out certain memes within 4chan. So the first letters of the first 21 candidates spelled Marble Cake. Of course, M was for Moot. Marble Cake, also the game. And these were memes that were common on 4chan at the time. So it was clear that they just owned this entire event. That notwithstanding, Time magazine still named him the most influential man of the year.
Great.
That year.
Wonderful.
Now, prior to the Wall Street Journal and Time interview, Moot kept his real identity separate. He told Grossman, "My private life is very separate from my internet life. There's a firewall between them." Now, in February 2009, the Washington Post did some investigation. They reported that he attended the Virginia Commonwealth University for a few semesters before dropping out. They also reported when he was still living with his mother in the apartment, which is might be why he didn't want to have the word out.
Right.
Now, he actually had in 2010 a TED presentation, you know, where he went and gave a TED presentation. He had been highly, highly critical of Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook because he said, you know, pure anonymity, being anonymous posting is the way to go. He doesn't think tying your identity as Facebook does or as Google does to actual person, physical person, actually is good because then it inhibits what people could say. So he's highly critical of Facebook. But the problem is, and as he related to an interview that was conducted after he made his TED presentation, he can't make any money because the postings on 4chan.org are such that no advertiser wants to be associated with them.
Oh, of course.
So he can't sell any ads.
Well, just looking at it from here, it's a website about nothing.
Yeah,
really. I mean, it's marshmallow. It's nonsense.
It's a website, but he thinks it's beautiful how order comes out of chaos. I guess you've got to spend a lot of time on 4chan.
I'm not
going to
give it that kind of time.
I also think it could be an age thing. I actually have the same feeling that you do about.
I think you're probably right. It's people that just don't have.
Now,
in
2010, he actually raised $625,000 to create a new online enterprise, Canvas. By the way, his interview in 2009, he revealed that he was living with his mom and he was $20,000 in debt because he'd been using his credit card to pay for the bandwidth for 4chan.
Oh.
And, you know, and his mom, you know, and he says, "What does your mom think of this?" He says, "Well, you know, my mom really doesn't like the content on 4chan.
Really?
She doesn't actually understand it. And she's not happy that I don't have a job and I'm spending all this money and that I dropped out of college." So so he decided to start a new venture called Canvas. Now, Canvas is where you can post images. It's canv.as. canv.as is Canvas. And he raised from VC $625,000. Now, what is interesting, and this is kind of an admission that you do want to have.
Oh, my.
I'll explain Canvas in a minute. Canvas is much better than 4chan.
I'm not so sure I would agree with you on that.
Okay, canv.as. Now, what he did, I mean, he realized that people that can't log on I mean, they have total anonymity. Many times will totally mess up a conversation because they just throw out crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So what he did, he made Canvas tie into the Facebook API, so you actually had to have a Facebook identity before you could log into Canvas. It's almost like he'd sold out to Mark Zuckerberg. But he realized that having this,
make some money.
Having this first cut at getting rid of the people that weren't ready to reveal anything about themselves got rid of a lot of the garbage. So he's now thinking that he can make money on this thing, and he got investors that'll put $625,000 against it. So now Canvas opened January 31st, 2011. It features digitally modified images uploaded by users who self-identify using Facebook Connect. Now, this is the thing. You upload an image there, and these images hang around for a while. Then if you like an image, you can take and copy an image that somebody else has loaded into an image processing program that's built into Canvas. You can modify it, and you can upload it again with your modifications. So you get kind of a gradual morphing of images.
It's bizarre.
It's bizarre.
It's totally bizarre.
And some of these GIFs in there are just really quite peculiar.
I didn't even get off the front page because some of the images are going to stay around for a while in my mind while I'm trying to sleep, and that's not a good thing.
Now, at the TED conference, this was after he had raised the $625,000, he was proud to announce that he was no longer living with his mother.
He's living under a bridge abutment.
So, way to go, Moot, a.k.a. Christopher Poole.
Oh,
I think he has stepped into something which indicates something about the impact of the Internet on our social interaction.
I think he's stepped in something that smells really bad is what he's done.
I'm not going to say anything about 4chan.
Wow.
So that's all you needed to know about Moot and Christopher Poole.
Well, we certainly have taken a walk on the weird side this morning. This is Tech Talk. I hope you're paying attention to that because we're going to ask a question that will actually result in something good happening out of that segment. You'll win some free food. So stay tuned. You're listening to us on one of these fine radio stations, WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWW2 FM HD2 Manassas, and WTOP FM HD2 in Washington. This is Tech Talk, and we will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
You thought this was a radio show. But
not going
is,
there.
It is not a radio show. It is a classroom of the airways, classroom of the HD airways, the FM airways, the AM airways, and the Internet wireways.
Yes.
So earlier in the show, I was talking about Christopher Poole, otherwise known as Moot. He started the website discussion group, the image board, 4chan.org. What was the name 4chan.org based on? If you get the correct answer to that question, you'll win two tickets to fine dining to the Escoffier Dining Room or at the Carême Dining Room, either at Tyson's Corner or at Woodbridge. And we'll soon have a dining room open in Richmond, too.
That's
but,
right.
It's close to coming. If you have the correct answer, you can reach us on Skype by going to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded directly to the studio, or you could reach us in a more conventional way.
I was going to say, I'll bet most people, because they're in a big darn hurry to win that free food, they're going to call us on the phone. And the number to call is 877-936-9333, 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333, and be nice to Andrew when he picks up the phone.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. Earlier in the show, I mentioned the fact that the iPhone 4S was out. I have an iPhone 4S. And this week, there were reports of heavy battery drain. Now, the iPhone 4S, of course, has a sealed-in battery, so you can't change the battery. It's soldered in, and many iPhone users just don't really like that. And so you've got to constantly keep charging it up. And it was launched actually 2 weeks ago. It's going to be launched next week in 22 additional countries. Now, actually, at the time they released it, they said you got an extra hour of talk time compared to the iPhone, but you get less standby time. Now, the phone continues to, continues the trend of a sealed-in battery. Now, a group that tore the iPhone S down, they bought an iPhone and they tore it apart. And it was done by the website iFixit. It revealed that the battery is slightly more powerful than the one in the 4. It has around 0.05 watt-hours more than the iPhone 4 battery. But, of course, the iPhone 4S has got a dual-core processor that uses a little bit more power.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was actually an issue. When there was some – I went to some of the discussion groups because Apple did note that this was a problem. And they said that this may have been caused by iCloud syncing problems. They said when there was a corrupted username in iCloud, your iPhone kept trying to go back and resync and resync and resync. And that was actually, they thought, responsible for some of the battery drain. So when they would go in particular cases and clear out all of the names and let the person set up a new name again into iCloud, it could clean it up. So I think they're still trying to do a little investigation what is going to go on. They're working on that. I suspect we'll have an upgrade to the operating system and maybe an iOS 5.1 soon to fix this problem. Actually, I have not had any battery problems with my phone so far.
Mm-hmm. How about Marianne?
I don't know. I actually don't know if she's had any problems or not.
Okay. You mean the help desk is closed now?
The help desk has been closed. I'm not certain if she's had any problems or not,
okay.
but I don't think she has.
All right. No. Hey, once again, in case you missed it, 877-936-9333. What was the website? The begat4chan.org.
That's
call
right.
Us now, 877-936-9333.
Now, ARM is entering the server market. Of course, ARM is Applied Microcircuits. It released a new chip aimed at the server market. They've traditionally focused on low power consumption mobile devices. So many of your Android phones have ARM, made the ARM chips in them. However, the Cloud Computer Initiative, the Green Initiative, is basically getting data centers to look for low power operations. So just because it's a big server doesn't mean that power efficiency doesn't matter. So they decided to take their highly efficient, low power technology and move it into the server arena. So this week they released a new 3 gigahertz core chip based on the ARM 64-bit V8 architecture. It also supports 32-bit architecture. It was called the X-Gene demonstration platform. It included Ethernet. It included Ethernet connections. It included PCI Express. It included serial ATA links, which would attach to a hard drive. It included transfer rates with on the back end buses of 80 gigabits per second. They called that the 80 gigabit per second fabric. Now, pushing ARM into the 64-bit architecture, like Intel's Xeon and AMD's Opteron, actually is a real advantage here, and it's providing real competition in the server area. So AMD and Intel have had trouble breaking into the mobile device market because they don't have the efficiencies, and now the mobile device market is moving into their space. Actually, I'm really happy to see this because now we'll have three people making chips for servers, Applied Microcircuits, AMD, as well as Intel. And the more people competing in that space, it's only better for the consumer.
That is correct. Let us go to, let's see, we're going to go to the west of the Potomac line. And this is Jim, who is calling us from Vienna, Virginia. Jim, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. It's raining out here.
Good. No snow yet? Let's keep it that way. Doc, go ahead and ask the question.
Yes, early in the show I was talking about Moot, who actually started 4chan. What was the name 4chan based on?
It was 2 up from the 2chan site, the Japanese anime site.
That is correct.
That is the correct answer. Jim, thank you for listening, and thank you for calling.
You'll win two tickets to fine dining to the Escoffier Diner with the Kareem Dining Room.
Very good. Thank you for listening to Tech Talk. We'll get you right back to Andrew. He'll take your information, and you're listening to us on Tech Talk. It's Saturday morning here on Federal News Radio. We got more stuff coming up, so stay with us here on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Tech Talk continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. Let me just finish this thread of a discussion on Anonymous Group.
Yes, right.
Which, of course, this is the group of hackers that sprang out of the 4chan environment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Anonymous is a group that that is active in what they view as civil disobedience against various companies through the internet while trying to maintain complete anonymity, which, of course, was the sort of the hallmark of 4chan. Originating in 2003 on the image board 4chan, the term refers to the concept of many online community users simultaneously existing in a chaotic global brain. This is how they like to view it. See, 4chan actually has around 14 million active users. There are 700,000 posts a day. So there's a lot of action on 4chan.
Mm-hmm.
On 4chan. And in its early form, the concept has been adopted by a decentralized online community acting anonymously in a coordinated pattern, and they were primarily focused on entertainment. But beginning in 2008, the Anonymous Collective became increasingly associated with hacktivism.
Great.
You know, instead of just going after entertainment like, you know, hacking, say, Sony PlayStations, they got into hacktivism, and they were protesting and other actions promoting internet freedom and freedom of speech. Now, actions credited to Anonymous were undertaken by unidentified individuals who applied the Anonymous label to themselves as attribution. Because if you would log on to, you know, 4chan, you could all, you know, most people just log on, make Anonymous posts. So that became a standard way to do it. You didn't even have to put a name. You just left it as Anonymous. Now, so many of the things which they have gotten involved with, they were involved in a major protest against Scientology. Remember, we had all these Scientology protests about Scientology, and that was orchestrated by Anonymous. Then they were actually in the 2009 Iranian election protest, and they hacked all of the servers in Iran. So we probably thought, well, that's probably all right. You know, going after Iran, not a problem. Mm-hmm. And then they perceived that Australia had started censoring the internet, so they started hacking all the government sites in Australia. And then PlayStation began cracking down on people who were modifying their PlayStation to run different operating systems. So they were trying to crack down on PlayStation hackers, and that really upset Anonymous because they are PlayStation folks. So they began to attack Sony, and they brought down the entire PlayStation network. It took Sony months to bring it back up. Then when WikiLeaks came out and various credit card companies stopped supporting it, like Visa, they took that as an affront to freedom of information, and they started attacking anybody who slighted WikiLeaks. And that started with Visa and just went right on down through the group. They also gave a lot of Arab Spring support and hacked a lot of those government sites. So it's not like they're always trying to go after businesses, but anytime they view a slight against their community, they go after it. Typical tactics are distributed denial of service attacks, where they'll bring down a site just by running so much traffic to it, or by hacking into the site and then publishing and revealing information. So that was kind of something that came out of the 4chan culture. Let's look at high-tech Halloween.
All right.
When is Halloween? Monday night.
Monday night. You mean you haven't gone to Walmart and bought 40 bags of candy yet?
Jim, we have better than Walmart brand candy.
Godiva.
We have the big candy bars, not these little tiny ones. We've got the big candy bar.
Kids, stay in school. Be like Dr. Schertz.
Okay, now we have, you can carve your pumpkin online. So you moms who just don't want to clean up all that stuff, you can go to star.me. This is actually kind of a kid's site, you know, star me. The kid becomes a star. Mm-hmm. www.star.me. And there's, you can carve your pumpkin online. So you bring up the pumpkin, and then you can just take your knife and you can carve different shapes in it, the mouth and everything.
It's a virtual knife, right?
It's a virtual knife, yeah. See, this is the nice thing about this particular knife. You just can't cut yourself with it.
I bet I could.
It's, you know, you probably could. But and so you carve the pumpkin. This morning, I carved several pumpkins. I was quite proud of
them. I wish you'd brought them in.
I was quite proud of the pumpkins. You know, and I was actually working to get the teeth. It was very hard for me because you get one set of teeth on the top, and then you've got interlocking teeth on the bottom.
Right.
It took a lot of time to get the teeth just right with the smile. And so then you carve the pumpkin, and then there's already a candle inside of it lit. You don't even have to light your candle.
Wow.
So then you can look at your pumpkin with the lights on, or you can press a button and turn off the lights and see just the glow coming out through the holes that you carved.
So not only is it mess-free, but it takes the whole fire hazard thing out of it, too.
It takes a whole, and I guess you could take that pumpkin that you carve on your, and then you could put out on your front porch, you could put a flat-screen TV, and then you could make the pumpkin big. So when people walk up, they would see the pumpkin.
What I'd like to know, is there a place where you can egg somebody's house on the internet without actually having to go out, buy the eggs, and...
I haven't. I'll have to check on
that.
So that would be star.me. Then what you can do, you can actually save the you can save the pumpkin, and so other people can see your design. You can email your pumpkin design to yourself so that you can then print it out, and then you can use it as a template when you actually make your real pumpkin in the area.
Uh-huh.
They also, you can click on a button, it'll turn on your camera, your webcam, and you could point your computer at a pumpkin that you've actually carved at your house, and it will store an actual photograph of your pumpkin. Now, the problem is, when you push the button, it'll also just take a picture of you, so be careful before
right.
you actually give that website the right to
place
turn on your webcam.
The pumpkin in front of your face.
That's right.
There
now,
you go.
Now, some other high-tech Halloween items. Geo-tracking. your kids.
Uh-huh.
Of course, your kids have to have a smartphone, which I guess all kids have.
Most of them do by now.
So there's one application that you can download for $4.99. It's good for Android smartphones called Trick or Tracker.
Oh, jeez.
Trick or Tracker. And you install it both on the parents' phones and the child's smartphone. And then you can actually, and the parent can select an interval every 15 minutes, and they receive a text message that gives the kid's location. And you can also set up a geofence, and the parent gets an alert if the phone leaves a predefined perimeter. So you could actually track your kids as they're going around. Now, of course, they could just leave their phone in the car, and
right.
then you wouldn't know it. So it's easily outsmarted. But
hide it in a pile of leaves.
Okay, so this is the thing. Take the cell phone and then hide it in the bottom of the backpack, and then they don't know it's there. Yeah.
Until they get a text, which will take about 45 seconds.
Now, there's another free app, Google Latitude. This is from Google. It's a free app, and it allows users to sign up and receive real-time locations of friends and family. Each party has to approve that he's sharing his or her location with the others. And GeoLatitude has apps for almost any platform. You could have the Android. You could have the Apple iOS. You could have Windows phones. You have Blackberries. And so you could track everybody on a map. So you could have the whole family, and you could track where they are on the map. There's also a Find My Friends from Apple, and that's with compatible devices running iOS 5, and that's very similar to Latitude. Now the final idea for the high tech Halloween are from games. They've got the Plants vs. Zombies game. Now this is actually very popular this time of year, and players fight to keep the zombies from coming to their house. If the zombies get in, they'll eat out your brains, and the game is over. Now, this sounds kind of like a wacky game, but it's kind of clever because as you get better, you begin adding more and more weapons as you learn more ropes, and so it gets more sophisticated. So there is kind of a learning curve to this. Plants versus Zombies is available for the Android, the Apple iOS, the Mac, and the PC, as well as online. If you get the full version, it's a few bucks. There's a free app called Make a Zombie. Now, this is for the Apple device. Now, what you do is you can actually make a zombie. You can choose options of hair, blood-splattered clothing, empty eyes, missing appendages. Then you can download these images and put them onto a little cartoon zombie. And then you can actually save that cartoon zombie, and many people are using it for their Facebook photo.
Ah, or you can go to 4chan and put it up there.
Or you can go to 4chan and put it there, or you can go to Canvas and post it there. Then we have the Fright Factory. Mm-hmm. Now this is scary. This is $1.99, and it's kind of a stunt. There are a series of optical illusions, so you have the person stare into it, and you see these very, very ephemeral optical illusions, and you stare very hard, and you can see it. So there's one optical illusion, and the person can see it. Then the second one comes up, and they're staring very intently. Then the third one comes up, and then after about 10 seconds, a zombie pops up and screams in their face.
Great.
And they might actually just drop the whole autumn. Well, I'm glad we got through all of the Halloween stuff.
What I learned today was I'm going to your house to get the 5-pound Hershey bar on
Monday
night.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Listen, we love all of your emails. Send us an email at techtalk@stratford.edu. Make certain to go to the Tech Talk webpage, techtalkonline.com. And, of course, you can always go to the Stratford website, stratford.edu, and check out all the programs at Stratford University. We just love to hear from you. And make certain to tell them that you heard about it on Tech Talk.
That's right. You can listen to the show again tomorrow night at 6.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
And in college football today, it is the Navy midshipmen taking on the Fighting Irish at Notre Dame. That starts at 1:35. The coverage does kickoff at 3:30. Football, make that hockey tonight at 6 o'clock with the Caps and the Canucks. And it is right now 32 degrees in the nation's capital.
Commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal